I've been covering this sector as a whole for almost like a decade and a half. Amato precisely been covering almost ever since the company was called Foodie Bay. And now it all seems it was just yesterday.
For journalists like my colleague Priyanka Sahai, who have been covering Zomato since its inception, the last few days have been rather eventful.
It's been a very, very interesting couple of days, especially on account of Zomato. Given the fact that the company, of course, has issued its numbers and the fact that the earnings call happened today and the founder did attend the call, which all of us was expecting at least to, it's been a couple of very, very newsy days.
For most of last week, the Zomato stock was unidirectional. In one day alone, it went down 10%. And then another 10% just the next trading day. A total of 23% free fall in just 48 hours. Only to recover this Tuesday on the back of seemingly better quarterly numbers, news of a corporate reorganization, but the volatility in its stock performance, a far cry from its blockbuster public markets debut last year. From the stock skyrocketing 65% on listing day to becoming poorest performing Indian consumer internet stock, down 67% last week since the start of the calendar year, it has shaved off over 71,000 crore rupees in market capitalization. Zomato clearly has been beaten, bruised, and left battered. But can Zomato turn a corner and gain new grounds? Will the second quarter numbers of this fiscal be that inflection point? But why then is a large existing shareholder like Uber exiting the company just when the stock has jumped 37% after going as low as 40 bucks a piece? In this episode, we will go beyond the headline numbers, talk to important stakeholders like restaurant owners and also rivals who sense a business opportunity as large platforms like Zomato are getting caught in the crosshairs of regulators, the law, and shareholders.
It is for the first time, like so many months, that the company has given investors a profitability target. For the first time, all these years, they were shying away from giving a target, saying that this is something which they cannot disclose, but today they have. Now the company aims to get to an adjusted EBITDA break-even for overall Zomato business earliest by the quarter four of this financial year. In case this is missed, it is pretty certain of achieving the target by quarter two of financial year 2024.
It's Thursday, 4th of August. From the Economic Times, I'm your host, Arijit Barman, and you're listening Is India Eating Out of Zomato's Hands on the Morning Brief.
We never used to say growth at any cost. I actually don't know who all of us are, but we never used to be a growth at all cost mindset.
That's the man under the spotlight, Dipinder Goyal, the founder CEO of Zomato. On the face of it, the expiry of Zomato's one-year lock-in period of its anchor book possibly turned the blizzard into an avalanche and flattened the Zomato stock. But for sophisticated investors, the concerns have been deep-rooted. Slowing growth, issues around governance, FOMO acquisitions like Blinkit, elongating the path to profitability, an essential corporate helix when interest rates and inflation are both going up.
In the earnings call, what the company earlier denied to state any obvious targets, but eventually said that that will be a broader horizon that they'll be looking at, perhaps even an extended deadline, not giving any specific date for that. But what interesting thing came out was that the company has downgraded its investment in this whole quick commerce space. Essentially, Blinkit is the only company that it has invested in, specifically in the quick commerce segment. So from 400 million that it had earlier earmarked, it has said that it will be putting in some 320 million in Blinkit. 150 is what has been invested so far as we speak.
Why the downgrade?
There was no explanation as such. But see, how it happens is that Tinkit's acquisition has been a contentious one, and there's been a lot of questions around the whole scheme of things. The way the deal was structured, the valuation at which the deal was locked, a lot of related party transactions, conversations are also making rounds. Essentially, the space in itself is under the radar because globally we've seen the companies in the quick commerce space, the so-called 10-minute space, is crumbling down. Why should India be any different is the big question here. And I think Zomato should take some time to address this concern of its stakeholders.
See, we've seen the food journey over the last decade, and we know that the food business is breaking profit almost nowadays, and we know what's the nature of the business that works well, right? And all the signs and the data that we have for the Blinkit business so far, we think that's a better business in terms of customer cohorts, in terms of potential scale, all of those things. So whatever data we have so far, we just love the business. And we think that the synergies between these two businesses are also very, very high. And in the long term, business A will help us build moats for business B, and business B will help us build moats for business A. So it's going to be a cool thing to do. So that's what we're going at.
But what baffles people like me is the adjusted EBITDA concept. It's been practiced globally by many tech companies.
When EBITDA as a metric is globally acceptable, these young internet companies have a tendency to mold it in order to suit their needs and narratives. So in case of Zomato, it has stated that the adjusted EBITDA, they call it as EBITDA plus share-based payment expense minus rental accounting and stuff. Essentially, EBITDA plus the amount they are incurring on ESOP, the cost that the company is incurring. Now, in my view, these are poor standards of disclosure. See, because at the end of the day, you can add in anything in an EBITDA and go ahead and say that this is adjusted. What is the point of having EBITDA in the first place, for that matter? I would say that on balance sheet, we need to talk maths and not notions. Unfortunately, these companies still think otherwise.
In other words, it means EBITDA minus expenses incurred on share-based payments, another word for ESOPs. But in Zomato's case, it's meaningless, since out of an EBITDA loss number of 150 crore rupees, there is 130 crore rupees unallocated expense. So when they say food delivery broke even on a quarterly basis, it's purely on an accounting basis without allocating any tech or corporate overhead. In April-June quarter, the adjusted EBITDA loss figure was 220 crore. But what about simple profit and loss or revenue? Is there an uptick? In the last few quarters, even revenues have been flat. So here's the good news first. Consolidated losses are down by nearly half to 186 crore rupees when compared to the same second quarter of last fiscal. Simultaneously, quarterly revenues are up 67% to a little over 1400 crore rupees compared to a year before.
The statement that Zomato has issued, a food delivery business specifically I'm talking about. Now the gross order value stands at about rupees 6,430 crore. It's quite impressive as compared to, say, last year, same quarter, similar quarter, which was rupees 4,540 crore. Significant jump. So indeed impressive. Let us also remember that we are comparing this with a quarter which had just recovered from the pandemic loss in business. So last year, around this time, the company was just recovering and had held back its own. From there, it's been a significant ride. So we'll have to give it to them they deserve. But how this is going to translate in the next coming quarter? Will there be a stagnation what this growth momentum will continue, we'll have to wait to watch that.
But ideally, instead of quarter-on-quarter numbers, one should compare with pre-pandemic numbers to get a more realistic picture.
In terms of number of orders that was generated by the company, there's been a significant increase. As compared to something, we're sitting on somewhere around 16 crore orders this quarter. This is against some 14 crore orders, which was reported in the previous quarter. So needless to say that there's been a healthy increase in the number of orders, even though the average order value or the average ticket size has remained stagnant. But the numbers have increased. Frequency has increased. That is remarkable.
Frequency of orders may have gone up, but the other key metric, that is the average order value, gross order value divided by total users, is stagnating. When Zomato went public last year, it came to the markets with a record high average order value, driven by a shift in consumer behavior during the initial year of the pandemic. Ideally, when normalcy returned, AOV too should have seen a bump.
On the earnings call, we heard Akshant Goyal talk about the issues that have been boosting forces to the company, which included inflation. And we've seen that reflecting on our bills when we go to restaurants and when we order food. The fact that the food prices across the restaurant industry has increased, considering the inflation, the company was vocal enough to acknowledge that the delivery charges that the company charges has also increased. There's been a hike in fuel prices, which has led to a hike in delivery charges, and also the willingness of the consumers to pay more delivery to get convenience delivered to their doorstep. And of course, return of people to the offices, which will lead to you ordering a larger ticket size because you're sitting with a group of friends and you'd want to order for maybe an office gathering or something. All of this has happened. But what was remarkable to note that for once, the company did not disclose the order value, the average order value. Ideally, they should have. But in the earnings call, the company did share that there wasn't any substantial hike in that number. It remains stagnant. My question here is that when there are so many external forces leading to an increase in the cost of the consumption, leading to the increase in the cost of food prices, where is that amount going? Why is a consumer's ticket size not increased? Who is absorbing that cost? Is it that the company is still in a cash burn mode, absorbing that cash still as we speak? Or there's more to it? So there are no clear answers to that. And I find that a bit alarming.
We can't tell the future of how life will look like. But actually, like, I think we're so close to it. And if nothing else changes, this will happen. Right? But see, we actually live in a dynamic market. We live in a like dynamic world. So we don't control a lot of things that happen to us. So we'll see.
And that's exactly the point. Inflation from food to fuel is playing spoiled sport. And people are cutting back on all discretionary spends, including eating out. At the same time, post-COVID, whatever little they're spending on dining out, they're doing so while going to the restaurant and not while ordering in, while watching TV. And most analysts will tell you, price realization growth alone is not sustainable. It has to be accompanied by volume growth. Problem is, Zomato is still metro-centric, where it is slowly but surely peaking out. Despite trying to expand its footprint and offering, just the top 8 cities contribute 60% of the gross order value as per the March quarter numbers. If that's not a lack of depth in the market, what is? Even though Zomato insists on collaborating and not competing with its stakeholders like restaurants, most of them are unhappy with the high commissions, bundling of services, or advertising dollars that platforms like Zomato or even Swiggy charge from them, forcing them to tap the CCI against what they call anti-competitive behavior. Kabir Suri, co-founder of Azure Hospitality that runs the Mamagoto chain, is the president of National Restaurant Association of India that represents the interests of 5 lakh restaurants nationwide.
There are a few issues that obviously restaurants and Zomato are constantly having to deal with. There's one issue, obviously, of commissions, higher commissions, lower commissions, what's the right commission? So that's one topic. Second is unbundling, which basically means restaurants want the ability to deliver goods themselves, and they feel that when they sign up with the likes of Zomato and Swiggy, you are fundamentally restricted because that's how the policy works with them. The third is data masking. So what that means is that information regarding the customer is not shared with the restaurant. So when you as a customer order online through the app, we don't get to know who's ordering A. And second is if there is any issues or preferences or engagement with the customer, we're unable to do that. So these are the three main larger issues.
But isn't customer data the very moat on which these platforms have built themselves on?
No, so principally, before the likes of Zomato and Swiggy, restaurants always delivered. The difference is that the process has been sort of streamlined and more consumer-friendly, right? So what that allows you to do is basically understand your customer, right? What I think our issues are in respect to the unbundling part, it's not that you sign up and you can't sign off. The issue is that in the case of Zomato, for example, you've got Zomato Pay. So you as a customer pay Zomato, Zomato as a pays us thereafter, right? So that's one. Second is Zomato delivers the food. Third, you are listed on Zomato's portal. Fourth, you have to advertise on Zomato's portal. So what that means is if I want to be just listed on your portal, right, I have to also make sure that my food is delivered by Zomato. So what we're saying is that they're independent categories within the marketplace. We want those independent categories unbundled. Why should everything be bundled, right? So what that means is we're happy to be listed, but we're also happy to deliver our food ourselves.
Don't they also help in terms of discoverability? Isn't there an immediate bump in sales the moment you sign up on these platforms?
So how does it work? I mean, in order for you to list, you have to pay A. Second, in order for you to list, you have to discount B. In the earlier days, when Zomato was funding the discounting themselves, the contribution of discounts were minimum. So what discounting has done, it has basically is gradually changing consumption. You've earned billions of dollars in trying to buy the customer, right? But fundamentally, buying the customer is a different type of customer. Ultimately, it's the food that's the hero. So if your food is not good enough, or if your food is not sustainable enough, you will get a different set of customer base. And that's the bigger problem for Zomato, which is basically when you're buying customers or when you're acquiring customers through discounting, it's not the product, it's the price that matters. And in our understanding, at least in the food business, it's always the food that matters. Price is obviously relevant, but it's an open market. Either you outprice yourself, so you're competing with your peers.
And where does a Zomato's commission stack up versus their peers from around the globe?
The main difference is labor cost. Across the world, labor cost is much higher than India. You cannot use a foreign model in India. Labor, for example, your average salaries in India, where minimum wage is much, much lower than what the West has as minimum wage. However, in my understanding, if you do the math correctly, it should not cost more than 60 to 70 rupees. Maybe now that the oil is a little higher, 80 rupees to deliver a good within 5 kilometers, right? What does that comprise of? That comprises of gasoline, average out the bike cost, and you average out the labor cost, you divide it against the number of transactions, the AOV. So technically, that's what it should be. But when you get into the percentage game, it changes. For example, if your AOV is 1,000 rupees and you're getting charged 20%, that's 200 rupees, right? So technically, it's a margin in the benefit of Zomato, right? So what many chains and many restaurants with a higher AOV are asking for is a lower commission based on that to create the sustainability of the business.
Sensing this collective angst and business opportunity, players like Thrive have come up to offer an alternative to restaurants and cloud kitchens that work predominantly on delivery models.
I'm Drew. I actually run this company called Thrive. It's a food delivery platform used by over 11,000 restaurants right now. I do have experience prior to Thrive, where I used to run hashtag loyalty.
Having worked with restaurant partners as their SaaS vendor, Dhruv's hashtag loyalty pivoted to cater to an important missing piece.
We were working with a ton of restaurants and we realized they're not making any money. They use our tool for various marketing automation, ads, customer acquisition and whatnot, right? But at the end of the day, top line looked great, bottom line was horrible. And that's when we felt that we need to dig deep into this game of food delivery. And that's how sort of things got started.
So what does Thrive really do?
So we realized food delivery has three components. One is the infrastructure, which is your technology, your system. Second is your entire delivery infrastructure in terms of logistics. And third is bringing in discovery, right? So we felt that currently with the way aggregators work, all of this is very bundled, right? It's one percentage or one commission that I pay. Sometimes goes up to about 35-40% because I'm paying for ads, etc. on top of my listings, right? So we felt it's time to really unbundle the way food delivery works. And that's how Thrive started. We felt that rather than creating everything ourselves, we will work with various ecosystem partners to create a very valuable system where everyone sort of profits. So we started as a direct ordering platform, said that, hey, you're a restaurant, you get the order, we fulfill it. It's our systems and it's our rider partners, as simple as that. And we'll charge you a significant low commission. And the cherry on top is we give customer data. Today, aggregators still don't give customer data.
But the main differentiator, much lower commissions charged from the restaurants.
Today, on an average, a restaurant would pay somewhere around 23% on a Zomato or Swiggy. That's an average. New restaurants go up to 30%. The old horses are at about 15-16%. We charge 3% for our commission. There is a gateway commission, which is 2% on top of that, and costs are outside. So there's a significant drop in terms of the value of what we put out to restaurants.
With scale comes unit economics, provided you focus more on value and less on volume. And Dhruv says that is doable even with full transparency and sharing customer data.
Food delivery for us, when we did our research, extensive research, speaking to folks at current platforms, restaurateurs, all the organizations that run it from companies like DoorDash, in outside India as well. Consensus was food delivery in India is simply a zero-sum game. Nobody's making money. Our theory has always been to change food delivery from a zero-sum game to a positive-sum game, right? How to grow in a sustainable manner where from day one, every partner in our ecosystem is making money at a unit economics level. From an initial strategy point of view, we've been targeting businesses plus that rupees 500 AOV, right? We've not been going after the sizes, which would be 60 rupees or 80 rupees, right? So second, I think for us overall, I think we're still a little early. I think once we have sufficient scale on discovery, the revenue model that we're working on is going to evolve.
That's a good $100 more compared to Zomato. And Dhruv says it went all the way up to 650 rupees before stabilizing at 550 levels, simply by focusing on value and not on the 50 rupee gulab jamun just to drive sales numbers.
I think the idea was this is a Shopify for restaurants, which is super convenient, free to use, you're paying basis usage. So initially, when we started, we felt, okay, we want to change behavior, we want to change category. over time, we realized that in a market like India and how deeply ingrained current aggregator platforms are, we will have to put effort, money, and time into discovery.
And that's why strategic players like Jubilant Foodworks, Indian franchise owners of Domino's Pizzas, come on board as key investor and partner after the initial VC and angel funding rounds to scale up further. Within 2 years, Thrive has 11,000 plus restaurants across a little over 100 cities on their network and 8 lakh users. But once you add the 3 million users that relied on them for tech support in their earlier SaaS avatar, the compounding effect will become that much more as they focus going forward on discovery. That's the competitive landscape. Mind you, Thrive is not alone. There are quite a few like them mushrooming across the country. But how is Zomato addressing all that? Some cosmetic changes seem underway, like an internal reorganization. But most importantly, it is finally making important corporate disclosures around conflicts of interest involving key management personnel, something it should have done months ago. Let's go back to Priyanka and figure out why.
I'm glad that the company took time out to disclose this in as many words that Zomato's co-founder and ex-CFO Akriti Chopra is married to Blinkit's founder, which the company has just acquired, Albinder Dhindsa. Now, the lack of disclosure of the relationship between these two executives was a big trigger, needless to say that. The company has said that it was a public knowledge. Perhaps it was a public knowledge to somebody like me who has been covering the sector for many years. But was that a public knowledge to the retail investor who'd invested in the company? I would doubt. Let me intrigue you with this tiny little detail of who's with the company. Okay, that will help us understand how Zomato is like structured and what the power structure is of the company. So as per my sources again, there are 5 people core to how things work at Zomato. Dipinder Goyal, Rahul Ganju, Akriti Chopra, Mohit Gupta and Akshant Goyal. Combining their initials, they are together abbreviated as Drama. Now, high time investors and the bourses are able to decode this drama and see where their investments are going up.
My take. If you are a lodestar among unicorns and Zomato was, having tapped the public markets first, the sense of responsibility, governance goes up exponentially. As I've already argued before, some of its actions like conflict of interest over personal investments of Dipinder Goyal in companies where Zomato later puts money like ShipRocket or Blinkit, its largest so far by the way, or key personal churns right after listing, governance lapses, ESOP charges to key managerial personnel despite ongoing losses, smacks of bad judgment, hubris, and a scant regard for minority shareholders. If retail investors lose money in this volatile market, and due to such alleged misdemeanors, the trust will be broken and the entire ecosystem will suffer. Just look at the recent letter to the shareholders. The question answer format in the results note can be interpreted quite differently. There is a lot of flowery language and PR speak. For a listed company who claims to be a leader, there is no data point anywhere on market share or at least estimated market share. Isn't that odd? Also, the company has literally moved out and closed down almost all its international operations except the Middle East. But for some reason, they do not disclose the write-off costs for these acquisitions done. Remember, all the initial capital that they raised was for acquiring abroad, and almost all failed and closed down. You have been listening to Is India Eating Out of Zomato's Hand on The Morning Brief with me, Arijit Barman. Thank you, Priyanka, Kabir and Dhruv. Deeply appreciate. This episode was produced by Vinay Joshi Surbhi Modi from ET, and Saundarya Jayachandran from Awaz, who's also the sound engineer, along with Indraneel Bhattacharya from ET. Executive producers Anupriya Bahadur and yours truly. We hope you liked this episode. Do share it on your social media networks. The Morning Brief drops every Tuesday, Thursdays, and Friday. Do tune in to ET Play, our latest platform for all audio content, including The Morning Brief. Thank you, goodbye, and good luck. All clips used in this episode belong to their respective owners, credits mentioned in description.